It's always a great treat when our next guest is on our program. Amitava Kumar's new book is Every Day I Write the Book, Notes on Style. It features interviews with an array of writers whose distinct work offers inspiring examples for students and academics alike. The book's pages are full of practical advice about everything from how to write criticism to making use of that kitchen timer. Communication, engagement, honesty, these are the aims and sources of good writing. Storytelling, attention, and organization, solid work habits, these are its tools. The name of the book is Every Day I Write the Book. It is a writing manual as well as a manifesto. I respect any gentleman who has a manifesto, and I appreciate Amitava Kumar for joining us this morning. How are you, my friend?
Excellent. Thank you so much. It's good to connect in these times.
It is. It's wonderful to connect in these times, and always good to connect with you. I enjoy your work immensely. You've always been very, very nice to us, and I thank you very much for being here this morning. So I realize you did not write the book with, you know, anything on the radar that we could be living through these times, and yet here it is today, released, and it really can take on a new meaning of today wouldn't be a bad day to start writing.
Exactly. In fact, some days ago I tweeted that we are living in trying times. Start writing. Keep a journal. What you write today will become a part of history. Because I wanted to say to people, do not trust the state to be a keeper of your memory. Do not trust the media, except for WAMC. In fact, you cannot even trust your memory. Write it down, write it down.
That idea of not being able to trust your memory, why is it then so important?
I would like, you know, think about 9/11. When you're living in the moment, things are changing so fast. You're experiencing things at a deep level. You think you'll remember it forever, but perhaps what you remember is one thing or two things. And then, as time passes, one memory gets overlaid with another. People often remember things as if it happened to them, but actually they were not there. And I'm not only speaking about Joe Biden. And, you know, it's very important if we write it down, we are producing a record for ourselves. And also I think what is at the heart of writing is that you are able to process experience through that writing, through language, and then what you're experiencing becomes more real to you and more meaningful. And what is life except the desire or the striving to find things or make things more meaningful? Otherwise, it's utter chaos.
When you are writing and you put it down, you probably wouldn't, again, these are different times, but you probably don't think, I'm doing this for the sake of history so that this is properly chronicled. That may be a little too highfalutin, but
yeah.
It's to clear your mind of what you were thinking at that moment.
Yes. The world isn't, this will sound extreme, but the world doesn't exist till you have given form to it in language.
Hmm.
We take the world as granted because that's how we have trained ourselves to live, but just to write about what does it mean to have the virus and not have the sense of smell? What does it mean to have the rain outside and you cannot smell the earth? Write it down and make it real. That's my motto. That's what I tell my students to do too. I ask my children right now to keep a journal every day, and it's been a delight to read their experiences too.
You have an essay in the book where you talk about depend on your dumbness. Why is that important?
I think I got that from Philip Roth.
Yes.
And Grace Paley. Because that wonderful quote from Philip Roth in American Pastoral is about you get people wrong and then you get them wrong. And then on careful reconsideration, you get them wrong again. And that getting them wrong is living. And the part about that Grace Paley says is that if you are dumb about something, you produce fiction. If you know it already, then you produce criticism. The dumbness part is important because we do not know, if you're honest, we do not know so much that is happening in the world. And right now, it's all the more true. The most authoritative truths are being produced by people who are either experts or people who are, to put it in a polite way, populists, you know, who are telling us lies. And so resort to your dumbness in order to produce the most honest writing that you can, because we do not, to be honest is to know how much is beyond our grasp at the moment. If we do not know what will be, tomorrow will bring. And to be recording that with a certain degree of clarity is being true and being alive.
You have a section in the book, you're talking about creative writing, and you say, during the time that I worked on this book, I would ask creative writers what they had to say about academic language. And it's an interesting thing because, I mean, overall, I guess the book is a style guide for academic writing. But it is, but you talk about Toni Morrison, you talk about Marilynne Robinson in that section. It's fascinating to me because it's really, no matter what we're writing, it's all creative writing, isn't it?
It is. Even when you're writing, and maybe not when you're producing a bus schedule, but anything anything above that is creative writing because you are giving structure and form and sometimes voice to what you're writing. And if we think a little bit more about it, we'll be able to consider even our post-its that we write as something that is a matter of style. You know?
You have a quote in here from George Saunders. In my view, all writing should be gonzo in the sense that we should concede that the writer's pre-existing prejudices and assumptions cannot be filtered out or quieted. Better, they should be admitted. I think we pick up a trace of this in earlier philosophical writers. The other thing that seems to be sometimes missing from academic writing is the sense that the writer might be wrong, that the method of inquiry is limiting, etc. That idea that we can, that whatever is on our mind can't be filtered out is important, isn't it?
Yeah, especially important for academic writers, but even for journalists. The mask of objectivity that academics seem to wear, and masks are an important metaphor these days, actually keeps up that sense, you know, protects their views from prejudices, or so they believe. But prejudice guides our thinking. And it would be, again, to repeat a word I've used before during this conversation, it would be more honest to actually pursue and admit our prejudices. One of the essays I teach my students is George Orwell's On Shooting an Elephant. And it is important because he understands that he is doing something because of his prejudice. He has been put into a position because of prejudice. And for journalists, too, gonzo writing, I mean, you know, we are associated with Thompson and other people, is Hunter Thompson, is that it becomes more, it admits that your views are partial and that you are operating out of a particular position. And if you share it with your reader, you are being much more open about where you're coming from and where you're going.
When you set out on this project, the idea of a manifesto, what is it that you wanted to accomplish? It seems like you wanted to kind of clear the record, maybe as much for yourself as for others.
To be very honest, I thought I was producing dead writing for a very long time as a young academic, and I wanted to get away from that. I wanted to rebel against the system that I was in. But I also, unless this sounds hubristic, I also wanted to protect future generations of graduate students from the desire or need to produce sawdust as writing, you know, to let them think they can be creative, that critical writing and creative writing, there can be a blurring of the lines and everything you do can be exciting and new and fresh.
You write in the book, there is a section called Rage on the Page, and you start off that section by saying, I'm trying now to remember when it was that I stopped thinking of myself as a new immigrant. Did you figure that out?
I think so. I was asked by an Indian journalist after President Obama put my last novel on a list Now, do you belong? And I said, yes, I do, because the president of the country, a former president of the country, has read my book, while my own, while in the country of my own origin, the prime minister reads nothing except for propaganda, which, by the way, can also be said about the current president of this country.
Right.
Not a reader. But for me, the idea of a certain sense of belonging has crept in over these years. And the fact that you, Joe, are making space for me to talk on your program, that I can be heard by my fellow citizens, is also an affirmation. It's like, all right, I have a viewpoint. It might not be acceptable to everyone, but people are willing to grant me a space to be in conversation, and it's a great feeling.
But what do you think your background brings to your viewpoint that is important for us? I mean, this is the argument that we should make, right? That so much, I mean, one of the big concerns of the entire debate over immigration and illegal immigration and so forth is that we're depriving ourselves of what people from other places are bringing to us. So I'm curious of how conscious you are of that and in the context of this book and in our writing of what we can learn from your experience as well as help in developing and being more in tune with our experiences.
Yeah. There is a direct link to writing in this, because what I bring is an outsider's perspective. The outsider's perspective is one that blurs the lines between the inside and the outside for a moment. You see what was familiar in a light that makes it unfamiliar. And that is where there is a link with writing. I think the most exciting writing happens where there is a blurring of genres, where what had become fossilized as convention is loosened, and suddenly something else is seen. A new light is let in because a crack has appeared.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm bringing, and that's what I'm advocating in this book. In the examples that I choose, for example, there's a book by a British writer called Max Potter. It's called Grief is the Thing with Feathers. It's a line from Emily Dickinson. A man is writing criticism, but also he's writing about his grief, about his wife's death, and how the writing then becomes unstable. New is of interest to me, and I want to offer many more examples like that. For example, Claudia Rankine's book, Citizen, as examples of places where the genres have blurred what form you should write in. No longer. A new language has come in, which is what the immigrant brings, a new language, a new diction.
One of the things, if anything that is good that has come out of the last 4 years and this discussion about immigrants, is it seems that, and this is anecdotal, but I certainly have noticed it as someone who, you know, opens my mail every day and looks at all of the books that are being published and decides, you know, what I want to talk about and who I want to read and that there are more stories being printed by the immigrant story, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, has a wider audience. That people seem to be, the publishers are understanding that people want that and need it. And if any good of it comes, that there seems to be more voices out there that perhaps wouldn't have gotten the access had this clampdown not happened.
That's right. What will be interesting, though, you're absolutely right. What will be interesting, though, is that in the light of the current pandemic,
yes,
do we recognize how we live in an increasingly, inevitably, remorselessly global world? Or will we retreat into small precincts of provincialism? You know what I'm saying?
I do.
In other words, will we understand that our fates are always linked and will be forever now? That we, or will we clamp down into, you know, small embargoed sections?
Well, and what scares me about this, though, is that I look at this and I say, Okay, well, yes, what you just said is absolutely true, but that could be said for, how we feel about China, how we feel about Spain, how we feel about Italy, of what is happening there, and that yeah. we are blocking ourselves from that part of the world, whereas it seems in some of the national dialogue that's taking place now, we're not only blocking ourselves from other parts of the world, we're blocking ourselves from New Orleans, we're blocking ourselves from Michigan, we're blocking ourselves from New York City. We're blocking ourselves from places that are next door. Rhode Island of saying, oh, well, you know, we don't want anybody with New York plates coming in. I mean, that is dangerous, too.
Yeah, it is. It is. I think we need to have a material understanding of how come we are connected. For example, let's say I was trying to tell my child, who's 10-year-old, that what is how come a pangolin and its scale, an exotic thing, is being eaten in Wuhan?
Yeah.
Because, well, our globalization, the needs of capital, the way it is, Wuhan has served as a trading post and the production center, has increased the status of living and has increased money has come in and the desire for this good, and it is linked to how much we are paying for a shirt from China.
Right.
So these links make it so important that we understand how our daily lives are so much, we have benefited, and our daily lives are so bound together that there is no way in which we can just impose artificial lockdown. But the increasing point is greater dialogue, greater understanding between cultures to understand what we are doing to each other and to find better ways of interacting.
My final question to you is a big one, but I'll just ask it and in context of what we have just been talking about. When do you believe the writing? When do you believe the work that you do, the work that we do as writers can become or does become art?
Yes. I do not know exactly when it becomes art. I take the writing that I do, or the writing my students do, or something that I'm reading, I think of it as new or honest or important when I hear, let me rewrite that. I think of it as becoming honest when I hear newness in it, when I think it has escaped convention or a cliche. That becomes, and then when there is a self-examination or a self-incrimination even, that's even better. Then I think it's even more honest. Someone is not seeking to find absolution. They are seeking a certain kind of truth, an engagement. And art, I don't know, it's such a patient wait. In my own writing, I think, how often does one strike that note that makes it art? Very little. But the daily struggle to attain that is important, and I believe in that. I believe in sitting down every day and trying to hack out just 150 words and finding something, you know, that says, the sun has risen again, you know.
And maybe it just says a lot about us, but I mean, I look at, let's say, Immigrant Montana, your novel.
Thank you.
I look at that and I say, well, that's art. I mean, that's a beautiful piece of art, but you may never be able to look at it that way.
Yeah, I'm just filled with doubt. And maybe that also is a part of, you know, the doubt,
yes.
The thinking, am I hitting it right yet, you know? There is that line from Ted Williams that I quote about that Updike line. I'm sorry to be doing it online, but, you know, the line that Updike wrote about Ted Williams when he was last at bat at Fenway Park in 1960, the line goes, it was in the books while it was still in the sky, you know?
Yeah.
The ball has been hit. It was in the books while it was still in the sky. I'll remember lines like that and think, that's art, you know?
Yeah.
Pristine, precise, capturing something. If I can write one sentence like that in my lifetime, I'll be happy. I'll have been artistic.
Well, I love having you on this program. You make me just happy talking to you. The name of the new book is Every Day I Write the Book, Notes on Style. The book is published by Duke University Press. Amitava Kumar is, of course, a wonderful professor of English at Vassar College, and it is wonderful to have him join us. The new book published by Duke University Press. Amitava Kumar, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure.
Thank you, sir. Stay safe. Bye-bye.
And to you, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Again, Amitava Kumar's new book is Every Day I Write the Book, published by Duke University Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.